Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Close the door, close the door. What did you see? The stars. Close the door, close the door. They don't seem very far. Started raining. It got so damp. Couldn't read cuz.
Welcome to the Jewish Shower. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We are in the middle of the Sukkah holiday, and that's what we're going to be focusing on today. In this half hour of the show, I will be talking about today, which is Hashanah Rabbah, tomorrow, which is Shemini Atzeres, and Simchas Torah, which is Tuesday. Candlelighting time tonight in the greater Detroit area is 6:19 and further. In the second half of the show, I'm going to be talking about the portion of the week, which is Bereishis, Genesis 1-1. Yes, we're starting again. So, see, we've got lots to talk about. We've got a wonderful assortment of Jewish music. You'll be happy we did. And an awesome Hasidic story at the end. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Terrorist attacks in Jerusalem doubled last month compared to August, according to Israel's security agency, the Shin Bet. There were 26 attacks in Israel's capital in September compared to 13 in August. The number of attacks perpetrated against Israelis in the West Bank remained unchanged at 78. Police in Ukraine arrested four suspects for the brutal beating and robbery 2 weeks ago of Chabad Rabbi Mendel Deutsch, who remains in serious but stable condition at a hospital in Israel. Two men and two women attacked Deutsch near the central train station in Zhytomyr and fled the city with the rabbi's cell phone and cash, leaving him bleeding unconscious under a bridge near the station. Erskine and Kendall Felix, two brothers, were arrested in connection with the 2014 kidnapping and murder of Menachem Stark, a Jewish Brooklyn landlord. Stark, a father of seven, was kidnapped outside his Williamsburg office during a botched robbery in the middle of a snowstorm in January of 2014. His burned body was later discovered in a dumpster beside a gas station in Great Neck, Long Island. Swastikas were found at seven sites on and near the University of Toronto. Three swastikas near the university's downtown campus were discovered last month. Just before Yom Kippur last week, two more were discovered on a mural on one of the buildings, and 2 days later, another was found on a nearby sidewalk outside the Anthropology building. More than 3,000 people from over a dozen countries ran the second International Biblical Marathon in ancient Shiloh. This is actually pretty fascinating. Listen to this one. The Biblical Marathon follows the path of the Man of Binyamin, as he's referred to, whose story is written in the Book of Samuel. This man ran from the battlefield at Ebenezer near Rosh Ayin down to Shiloh, where the tabernacle was located. Interesting enough, the distance from Rosh Ayin to Shiloh, the biblical run, is exactly 26.2 miles, the length of the modern marathon. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats. They're gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Harry Schulfinman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We don't have a guest this week, but we're going to have tons about which to talk. The first thing I actually want to talk about is we just received the latest edition of the Koran Talmud. This is the beginning of the section of Baba Metzia. This is a fascinating rendition that they put together. Baba Metzia is traditionally the first Talmud that a person learns. And the reason why there is this tradition of using Baba Metzia, because we're really pretty much in the middle of the Talmud. Why don't we just start at the beginning? A very good place to start. No. They start here because the Talmudic process is best exemplified in the tractate of Baba Metzia. It deals with tort law, people, you know, coming to court with various different claims and counterclaims and how to deal with said claims and counterclaims. One of the traditional pieces to learn first, we're actually going to discuss right here. It's in the second chapter, which is found in this book. This book goes through volume, goes up through the middle of the book itself. It's going to be two volumes and complete, and includes one of my favorite chapters of Talmud, which is Perek HaZahav, which contains the different things of how the difference between money and commodities, for example, if one buys gold. Okay, so gold is used as money, but if you're buying gold with silver, so then the money is the commodity, and the gold is the commodity, and the silver is the gold. But what if you're buying silver with gold? You know, so there's all these different things over here, and then it leads into the next chapter about Ezer HaNeshek, which is the next volume, with laws of interest, you know, these type of things. So fascinating. Anyway, so the beginning of chapter 2, Eli Metzias, is if you find a lost object, we know that there is a command, no, in Judaism, finders, keepers, losers, weepers is not okay. There is a commandment. In fact, there are two commandments. One says if you find something, you should really have to go try to find the owner. And the other one is you're not allowed to hide yourself from it. Okay, so given that premise now, so you find stuff. Okay, there's just certain things that you would be allowed to keep. Like, for example, if you know it's ownerless, it's abandoned property, or the owner gave up hope of ever finding it again, or it never really ever had an owner. Like if you were digging in the dirt and you found a gold nugget. So you wouldn't have to go try to find the owner because no one ever owned this thing before. So the one of these is discussed, and this is where Talmudic logic is really fascinating, is if you find scattered grain, you're allowed to keep it. Okay, so you're walking along the ground over there and you still look, some scattered grain, I get to keep it. Well, the Talmud says it's not exactly that way. It's specifically talking where they would separate the place, central place, where people would come and they would separate the chaff from the grain. And there, so that gives a certain specific size that people just couldn't be bothered cleaning it up. You have a lot of grain, and you're doing all this threshing, and there's some that's going to be left over, and you're going to leave it there because you just couldn't be bothered. So the next person, they get to take it because you couldn't be bothered. That's why you left it there. How much is that? It says, Kav Be'arba Amos, which means, in modern terms, a peck in, say, in a 6x6 area. Okay, so the Gemara says that you're allowed to keep because we're talking about wheat. Wheat, not so expensive, and the area is such that it's too much of a bother to go pick it up. So the Gemara asks a question. What happens if you have a half a peck in a 3x3 area? So here you have the scenario. So if it is that one peck in a 6x6 area, you're allowed to keep. Maybe because it's too much of a bother to pick it up. Maybe in a 3x3 area, it's a whole less bother because it's a quarter of the distance. So you say, well, but it's only half a peck. Because you don't get a whole lot for your effort. So what do we do in that case? The Gemara doesn't answer that question. The Gemara instead asks another question. Oh, what happens if you have a 12x12 area and you have two pecks? Okay, so now you've gone from 36 square feet to 144 square feet. That's a whole lot difference. But you got two pecks. Is it too much of an area? Or you get double the return. What's the answer in that instance? Gemara doesn't answer. The Gemara then asks another question. You're talking about wheat. What would be if it was sesame seeds? Sesame seeds are a whole lot harder to pick up than wheat. I haven't like measured and compared, but I'm thinking that a sesame seed is probably about the fifth of the size of a wheat berry. But a peck of sesame seeds is worth a whole lot more than a peck of wheat. Maybe the bother to pick up that peck is worth it. Gemara doesn't answer that one. The Gemara then asks another question. What if it's a peck of pomegranates over that square area of 6x6? I don't know how many pomegranates are in a peck. I can't imagine it being more than 7 or 8, to tell you the truth. But there they are. They're scattered over there. Pomegranates don't cost as much, but it's a whole lot easier to pick up a dozen pomegranates than, say, wheat. So maybe it's easier. So you'd go bother. So maybe, you know, maybe you should just leave them there or try to return them. Or can you keep them? The Gemara, with all of these questions, if we half the size, if we double the size, if we take a different, more expensive commodity, a lesser commodity, says teku. Teku means that Elijah is going to come and announce the coming of the Mashiach. And one of the things that the Mashiach, the Messiah, is going to do is answer all the unanswered questions. So here, this piece of Talmud takes up an entire page. And the answer to the question is, we don't know. So you could ask, wait a minute, why did we go through all this? If the resultant answer is, I don't know, what do we need to do this for? And this is precisely Talmudic method. Because the purpose of the Talmud is not to know how to do something. If you want to know how to do something or know what to do in a specific given instance, we have the Shulchan Aruch for that, the Code of Jewish Law. The Talmud teaches how to analyze a situation. What would be if? Not just this situation, so that this way, it doesn't have to, the Talmud would, if it had to describe every possible scenario, I don't think there would be an end to how big the Talmud would be. But like this, the Talmud has given us the tools. This is all the oral tradition handed down by Moses to Joshua, to all the people, you know, till us till this day, the oral tradition. So we have the tools now where we can analyze a situation, whatever the situation may be, given the general principles, and come up with, well, this is the way we would look at this situation. So, Koran Talmud, yes, go run out right now and get one. You can even sign up. If you haven't signed up yet, I strongly recommend that you do, because they're coming out with a volume every, I don't know, 6-8 weeks at this point. They are on schedule. They will have the entire Talmud finished, I think, in less than 2 years. And definitely go to KorinPub.com. Look it over there. Take a look at Amazon. They have them there too. And tell them you heard about it on the Jewish Hour. That's it for the book review. Today, is not a holidays per se, but it has a name. The name is Hoshana Rabbah. There is a parable, a question which is discussed. Maybe it's not a parable. There's a question discussed in the Talmud. When two countries wage war, one with the other, you'll look, you'll see there's death and destruction on both sides. There's casualties, there's damage, there's loss. It's terrible. Both sides get beat up because of the war. So you ask, well, if that's the case then, how do you know who won the war? So the Talmud answers, the side, the country that makes a parade. They're the ones that won the war. So now, the Jewish people at the onset of this month, with the holiday of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, have been waging a war with the accusers, the evil inclination, etc., to win a victory for having a good year. So there's a battle that went on. How do we know who won? Well, it says whoever makes the parade. So it just so happens that in the synagogue services during the holiday of Sukkos, we take our four species, the Lulavan and Esrog, which we've discussed in previous years, and we make a procession around the center of the synagogue. It's kind of like a parade, indicating that we won. We went through Rosh Hashanah. We went through the 10 days of repentance. We went through Yom Kippur, and now we're going to have a good year. And what happens is we make this circuit one time around the center of the synagogue each day until we come to today. Today is technically speaking the last day of Sukkot, the holiday of Sukkot. Today's the last day when we'll use the Esrog and the Lulav. Today's the last day, if you're eating in the Sukkah, that you can say the blessing who has commanded us to eat in the Sukkah. Today we proceed around, we promenade seven times around. And it's called, each one of these promenades is called a Hoshana. And since there's seven of them, so it's called Hoshana Rabbah, which means the great promenade, the great parade. This day has been figured into the calendar such that it can never fall out on a Saturday. There is a custom today, if you haven't done it yet, if you're Jewish and you're within the listening area, there's a custom, you can still do it, you can do it till nightfall, of taking five willow branches and banging them on the ground and saying this short prayer about granting us a good year. So we would not be allowed to do that ceremony on Sabbath because willow branches are, we don't touch such things on the Sabbath. We're totally removed from such things. The significance of this is described in the Kabbalah. You take five specifically representing the five levels of divine severity and we smack them on the ground five times. The interesting thing, the willow is used in the four species of the Sukkot holiday because it has no smell or no taste. But when you bang it on the ground, it suddenly does have a smell. If you want to explain it physically, well, yeah, because the essential oils of the leaves have been released, which you can't smell unless you do that. You kind of smash them a bit. And this represents a sweetening of divine severity with divine kindness. And that's what's happening today. If you're using the analogy of the book, getting written in the good book. So Rosh Hashanah, it says the book is, you get written into the book of life. On Yom Kippur, the book is closed. On Hoshana Rabbah, today, the book is put on the shelf. Meaning that today is the conclusion of the Rosh Hashanah holiday, per se. What do we do today specifically? Well, it is customary to eat, for example, apple dipped in honey. Rosh Hashanah, we eat an apple dipped in honey. There should be a sweet, fruitful year. So since this is the mirror image of Rosh Hashanah, so we go into the sukkah, it's customary today sometime, to eat a meal so that you're actually saying the blessing who has commanded us to eat in the sukkah. And at that meal, to eat an apple dipped in honey to signify that we should have a sweet and fruitful year. And we would like to take this opportunity here at the Jewish Hour to wish all of our listeners a very sweet and fruitful year. This leads to tonight. Tonight is technically not Sukkot anymore. Out in the diaspora, outside of Israel, some people still eat in the Sukkot. We don't say the blessing. But the reason why we eat in the Sukkot is because we don't know really is today the seventh day or the eighth day is the way it was figured out some 2,500 years ago when Jews moved out of Israel and instituted an extra day of the holiday. So we eat in the Sukkot, but we do not say the blessing who has commanded us to eat in the Sukkot. The significance of the holiday is such that the holiday of Sukkot is actually not just a Jewish holiday. I don't know any people who aren't Jewish who celebrate the holiday of Sukkot, but the holiday of Sukkot is for everybody. And it signified the fact that there were 70 bulls that were offered on the altar during the holiday of Sukkot, compared to or on behalf of the 70 nations that are mentioned in the end of the portion of Noah, which would put you somewhere around Genesis 9 or so, where it lists all the 70 descendants of the three sons of Noah, and who all of us are descendants of. And on Shmini Atzeres, though, there's one bull offered as a representative of the Jewish people. God says, listen, I had a big party. You know, we invited the whole entire country, the whole entire world was there. Stick around one more day, and we'll have our own little party, just you and me. And that's what the Jewish people do. We celebrate also, the way it's set up, is that the Torah reading for the yearly cycle is concluded on Tuesday, and which would be called Simchas Torah, which means the joy of the Torah. We start on Monday night, tomorrow night, dancing with the Torah, and the dancing goes on into the night. And some people have a custom of doing it tonight also, like I will be dancing at my synagogue in Oak Park tonight. Not as much as tomorrow night, but tomorrow night it's like no holds barred, just continuous dancing. When there's larger communities and it's a whole lot of kids, no music because of the holiday. So it is easier when there's like a lot of people. Because, you know, people get tired, they sit down, but more people are against, so you go back. So there were times when I would dance till 5 o'clock in the morning. No problem. It's a little harder when you're like one of a dozen or two dozen people. People kind of, but, you know, in the years past, we were dancing till 1:30 or so, 1 o'clock, 1:30. Because the Torah says, I want to be happy. I want to dance. Listen, I'm finished. It's my celebration. But I have no legs. You, Jews, on the other hand, you do have legs. So you know what? You'll hold on to me, and you'll dance, and it'll be like I'm dancing. So the Torah itself is happy that we've gone through an entire cycle, entire year. And a very interesting thing happens in that Tuesday, we finish with the last section. We finish chapter 34, verse 12 of the book of Deuteronomy. And it's met with great circumstance and fanfare. And as soon as we get through with Deuteronomy 34, 12, we go right, same time, right then, immediately thereafter, Genesis 1, 1. There is never a time, that's what I said at the onset, technically speaking, the portion of this week that's going to be read in the synagogue on Saturday is Genesis 1:1, the portion of Bereishis. Because there's, right now, if you ask me what the portion of this week is right now today, I would tell you that it's the portion of Zois HaBracha. But it's always read during the week. It's never read on a Saturday, ever. That's the way the calendar's set up. So we'll be starting Bereishis. There's no gap. We go from end to beginning immediately, because life is like that. When you wake up in the morning, you just started your day. It's like it's a new thing. There's no time when you say, well, listen, I don't have a day today. Time goes on. The thing is, I've ceased to be amazed. This will be my 41st year of studying the Pentateuch, the five books. After about 10 years in, I stopped being amazed that I discovered something that I hadn't seen till now. So, and it's 41 years. Every year, I'm expecting this year, I'll be studying something and finding something that I didn't find till now, because after all, it's the wisdom of the Almighty, and the wisdom of the Almighty is eternal. And it also helps to study it with different commentaries every year. So this was what I was told as a yeshiva student, that of course, the Rebbe encourages everyone to learn the Chumash with Rashi, but also take on another commentary. Today, today's Hoshana Rabbah also marks something that happens on a yearly basis for those people who study Maimonides to finish it within less than a year. We finished yesterday, and we started today. This is one of the things that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, that people should learn, if they have the capabilities, three chapters of this magnum opus. It's 14 volumes long, such that you finish it in just shy a year. Comes out then in 10 years, you will have finished it 11 times. So this is like the 35th time, 36th time, I lost count, of doing it and such, because the Rebbe said that it's very important. We have this oral tradition. And the Rambam, in his introduction, says the entire oral tradition will be contained in this compendium of 14 volumes. And so a person who learns it has, for all intents and purposes, learned the entire oral tradition. A person can't learn three chapters a day, so the Rebbe suggested one chapter a day. That way you'll finish in just shy 3 years. And if that's too much for a person, well, the Rambam wrote an introduction. It's more like a table of contents called the Book of Mitzvahs, Sefer HaMitzvahs. And that's just a couple of paragraphs every day. Sometimes it's one paragraph, sometimes a paragraph. That one paragraph is repeated a couple times because it follows along with what's going on with the three chapters a day. And it's very, very easy to do. Even three chapters a day now is very, very easy to do, because you can go to Chabad.org, Chabad.org, and there they have something called Daily Study. And you click on it there. It's in Hebrew. It's in English. If you don't speak either one of those languages, well, they also have it in French, Russian, Spanish, and Portuguese, to the best of my knowledge. Maybe even more. And it's there. And like this, you do it, and you feel a sense of accomplishment. You're learning. You're getting smarter. This is something that it says we just will have this week, is Shabbos Bereishis. And it's, since we're starting the Torah anew, it says that we should start the Torah with some kind of nuance, something new we haven't done till now. So if you haven't done taking on Rambam, either pick yourself up a Rambam, which is a set of books. It's got its price. Moshe Naim Publishing is the one who's got the English translation in full, complete in 14 volumes, if you like into books. And if not, Chabad.org, Chabad.org, has the learning there. We are going to take a quick commercial break. We're up for some music next. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Hey, Schultzman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. I am going today to get Franklin Cider. It's a tradition in the Finman household that for Shmini Atzeres and Hoshana Rabbah, we have Franklin Cider, because as the Finman kids all say, I don't know all of them say, but some of them say, but it's true, Everything else is just juice. Up for your listening pleasure, this is Mordechai Shapiro, and the song is called Kol Haderech, All Roads Lead Back to God.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ana Melech Ana Melech Ana Melech Ana Melech Malchei HaMelachim Ana Melech Malchei HaMelachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ana
of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Err Schulfman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have up next, this song is Eliyahu Hanavi. It's a Jewish standard done this way, not so standardly. The group is called the New Haven Capella, and New is spelled like the one that's usually transliterated from the Yiddish. New meaning like hello, So that's this is the New Haven Capella. It's a pun. It's very cute, and it's a great band. Let's listen in to Elijah the Prophet. Someone you know have an addiction to opiates, ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey,
Schulfinman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is the Jerusalem Boys Town Choir singing holiday songs.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Schulfinman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week coming up the end of this week on Saturday will be read, will be Bereishis, Genesis 1:1. We're starting again. Now, one of the major things about the story of the Genesis is actually the very first word, the very first verse, Genesis 1:1. Let's look at it for a second. Some 2,300 years ago, there was a Greek king by the name of Ptolemy, with a P. I love those words that start P-T, Ptolemy, who is fascinated with Judaism and Jewish culture and Jewish wisdom, and he wanted to have a proper Greek translation of the Talmud, of the Torah, the five books. But he kind of figured that if you just got one guy to do it, to do the translation, well, you know, translation leads to interpretation. It's always better to study things in the original. Probably would have been better if the guy just would have studied Hebrew and could have figured it out himself. But no, he's a king. He gets to have it done his way. And he was also wondering, maybe, perhaps, there are things that are in the five books that maybe non-Jews shouldn't know. So what did he do? He built a massive structure that consisted of 70 rooms. And he took 70 scholars and locked them in, one in each room, with as much paper and pen and whatever else they needed. They had all of their needs taken care of. They just couldn't leave the room until they translated the five books of Moses. So what he wound up was 70 translations of the Bible. Now, again, leading to personal interpretation, the Almighty made a miracle. Got to put a little divine intervention here, that there were certain things that were translated in such a way so as to prevent misunderstanding. And also, like, for example, one of the four animals which is mentioned as being not kosher specifically and you shouldn't touch it is like the rabbit, which in Hebrew is Arnevis. The king's wife, Ptolemy's wife, her name was Arnevis. So they changed that. They changed it to something else. And there were, I think 9 or 13 different such misinterpretations. The first one is right in Genesis 1:1. We always translate, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's how it's always translated. Ptolemy, seeing it translated that way, might think that you have this God, okay, fine. But before God, there's something called the beginning. There's a beginning. So beginning created God is how he would translate it. So what did they do? They all translated it. All 70 of these scholars translated God in the beginning of his creation of the heavens and the earth. So they put God first. There's a statement in Perkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Father, that says that there are 10 sayings mentioned in Genesis 1:1 by which the Almighty used to create the creation. Let there be light, let there be space, let there be dry land, let there be herbs growing on this dry land, etc., until let us make man. There's 10 of them that God said, let there be. So it's brought down in the Ethics of Our Fathers. What did God need to do it in 10 for? He could have done it in 1. What would the one have been? Well, if you go through Genesis 1:1 and you count how many times it says, God said, let there be, there's only 9. Because, and the Talmud explains, because the verse, Bereshis bara Elokim, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, happens to be one of the 10th. In fact, if it would have happened that God would have created the creation using one utterance instead of 10, it would have been in the beginning God created heavens and the earth. Because there we would have had heaven and earth right there, already laid out, done. The question is asked, well, if God could have done it in 1, why did God do it in 10? And the answer, which is given in the Zohar, is Begain to Ishtamudinbe. In order that you should know him. Meaning, we have what to talk about. We have an entire creation process that we can now discuss, which details our relationship with the Almighty and the Almighty with us. Because the creation of the world wasn't for God to just sit back and kick off and kick his heels back and look and say, oh, look what they're doing. No. The purpose of the creation was in order that we, people, should know, that there is no place void of the Almighty, and every aspect of our life and every facet of it, you will find the divinity of the Almighty, and ki ba'or p'nei melechayim, and by the light, the countenance of the living King you live. And we owe everything to the Almighty. We have to take a quick break. We're running out of time. Don't go away. I've got an awesome Hasidic story for coming up right now. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats. They're gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Shultzman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I mentioned that if we ever get paid up for how much ever we need, I wouldn't talk about the need to go to RabbiFinman.com. Well, Baruch Hashem, thank God, October is paid. But if you want to get in touch with me, the way to do that is to go to my website, RabbiFinman.com, RabbiFinman. And you can check out, you can contact with me, you can check out archived editions of the show. You have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, which are different media in which yours truly presents Judaism in a fun and hopefully educational way. And there is a donation page if you want to go click on it, but we're not talking about that because I said we weren't going to talk about the donations page, which is also on RabbiFinman.com, which you can click and give a donation to as well, because I want to tell the story now. But go to RabbiFinman.com anyway, and you'll check out all the things that are there, and especially if you have some kind of question for me. I love questions. But anyway, this story I heard from Rabbi Shmuel Lu, who is, I don't know if he's retired yet, but he's the principal of the girls' high school in London, England. He's an American. He's got a bunch of kids that are out doing the Rebbe's work in somewhere in the United States, per se. I know there's one in one of the Carolinas. I think there's one in Pittsburgh. But his father-in-law was a businessman. His name was Zalman Jaffe. He was one of the founders of the Manchester Jewish community. Had very prominence there. And he was what would be called a friend to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe didn't have, Rebbe was alone. He was a person who was like aloof. He did not have many friends, but Zalman Jaffe would have been considered a friend. This is one of the people who could make, every Rebbe had somebody who could make him smile, and Zalman Jaffe could make him smile. So the Rebbe had a custom that whenever he would appear publicly, so he would always have like a bottle of wine on the table. And that bottle of wine would be in a plain brown paper bag. Now, Lubavitcher Rebbe, this is a person of prominence. What kind of business having wine in a plain proper bag, plain paper bag? So he decided on behalf of the Manchester community, he wanted to give the Rebbe a silver decanter. You know, it'll serve just as well. And this is according to the honor of the Rebbe. But he knew that the Rebbe didn't take to, first of all, gifts. And second of all, the Rebbe wasn't into presentation. The Rebbe had in his house a very large silver menorah, but he actually used a much smaller base metal menorah for his own personal lighting of the candles. So instead, what did he do? Such as giving it, so he presented it to the question to the Rebbe's wife, the Rebbetzin, and said, I'll call you back in a week. So he called back in a week, and the rabbi's wife said, I mentioned it to him, but he didn't say anything, didn't acknowledge. Shortly thereafter, Rabbi Jaffe got a letter, and on the letter, there was a P.S. And the P.S. read, let me just pull this up. P.S. Mrs. Schneerson told me about the request about the bottle and paper bag. Forgive me, but while we will accept the thought as though it had actually happened, meaning if just because you wanted to give it to me, it's like you did give it to me, I prefer a bottle with a paper bag more than a beautiful silver bottle. And the Rebbe added, there are many reasons, but I'll tell you one of them I hope you'll understand, is I don't want to create a barrier between the way that I live and the life of those people around me, because the Rebbe would say, there are people out there who can't afford a silver decanter. And the Rebbe continued, he gave an example. I have many silver esrog boxes, but I prefer a plain cardboard box. And that's the story. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We got Simchas Torah tonight, 6:19. Go to the synagogue, dance. Tomorrow night, 7:30. Go to the synagogue, dance. Have a great week. We'll see you again next week.
Op om sukkerstad.